Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 574, titled Interview with Daniel Hopsicker, Victor Kozeny's Last Stan. And by the way, that Stan is S-T-A-N, not S-T-A-N-D. That pun will become far more meaningful as we get into the broadcast. This program is being recorded on October 29th of the year 2006. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker, the heroic investigative researcher and author of, among other titles, Barry and the Boys, and also Welcome to Terrorland, not to mention numerous overlapping articles on the Mad Cow Morning News website. Daniel, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Pleasure to be with you, Dave.
Well, down there in South Florida, you have for a number of years been investigating a network that obviously wields a lot of influence in South Florida. It also wields influence around the world, in many different places around the world. This milieu, there's my favorite word again, overlaps to an enormous extent many of the people that pulled off the September 11th attacks, and it has a lot to do with the September 11th attacks. And yet, the more time passes, the more it becomes clear that what Tony Blair spoke of shortly after the 9-1-1 attacks is only too true, which is that the attackers were part of a worldwide global network. And as we launch into this program and this discussion, I guess the Daniel Club Hopsicker is going to be taking us around the world, and we're going to be taking a look at some areas in the former Soviet Union, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, hence talking about Victor Kozeny's last stand, because Victor Kozeny is part of this global network. So how's that for an introduction, Daniel?
Well, it's I always like guys like you that have the big picture, because I don't, you know. But I started on the ground. The owner of the flight school and the man that ran it are both crooks. And the owner of the flight school, Wally Hilliard, had a Learjet busted with 42 pounds of heroin on board same month I arrived. And Wally Hilliard is also in business with a number of Iran-Contra operatives. The most recent of which I just discovered in a story I did last week. He's a partner, part owner of a company called Spatialite, along with two guys from, it doesn't get any bigger, Farhad Azima, an Iranian, who ran Global International Airways, which was Oliver North's TOW missile group, and also they did all of the air transport for ITSCO, which was Ted Shackley and Tom Kleins from the CIA, or the rogue CIA, or whatever you want to call it. But so Wally Hilliard, the guy that owned the flight school that Muhammad Atta went to, is part of a network that includes all of the Iran-Contra operatives. And that would have seemed to me to be a good place to start and an honest investigation that began with how is it that your plane got busted with 43 pounds of heroin the same month Atta arrived at your flight school would have eventually answered the questions that we all want answered, which is what the hell was going on.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's very clear as one begins to not only move in past the superficial levels of the operations of which September 11th was a part, one comes to you come upon a network that is, it represents a fusing of the overworld and the underworld, because obviously many of the people that are at the operational, people like Wally Hilliard, people like Rudy Deckers, people like Victor Kozeny, people like Farhad Azima, and a great many others are deeply involved and have been involved for a long time in extremely illegal activities. And yet, as you've noted in so many different articles and in Welcome to Terrorland and in Barry and the Boys, so many of these people, criminal though they be, have juice. They're protected. They do not receive the treatment that most criminals receive. On the contrary, they are treated like royalty, one could say, and that's because when one begins examining this underground, underworld network, it becomes quite clear that some very prominent names and some very prestigious people are part of this global network. However, they stay out of the limelight, and their grassroots operatives stay out of prison because of those connections.
I always remember what a Miami private investigator who had been in Miami for long enough to be totally wizened and cynical told me, explained how drug trafficking works. He said any drug operation needs four essential things: production, transportation, distribution, and protection. In other words, there is no place in the world today where 43 pounds of heroin transits a country without the rulers of the country being aware of it. It doesn't work that way. So that's how things work. And it's just, you know, I guess what shocks me is how good these same people are at strewing breadcrumbs in every direction except, you know, the one that would be fruitful. Any investigation into 9/11 that began with the criminal associations of the people that were doing business with the terrorists while they were here would answer questions that we all want answered, or that most of us want answered. Now, some of us don't. Some of us have the answer, and those are the people that I don't really have time for. Those are the believers, okay? Apparently there's a lot of people out there that that rather than investigate and use their critical faculties would prefer to believe something. And those people are supported by people like Adnan Khashoggi and his minions. I mean, it is so ridiculous. And just surfing on the net the other night, I saw a documentary that began with a minute on camera of a Toronto talk show host named Barry somebody, who had done a 9/11 documentary called The Great Deception. And this guy is speaking to camera about how that we all have to understand that the 9/11 movement has been penetrated. I mean, if they have the power to do 9/11, of course they have the power to place agents, and we all have to be not paranoid, you know, but we have to be aware. And this guy that's talking took money from one of Adnan Khashoggi's minions, John Gray. It's just so utterly shameless that it takes your breath away. I mean, it just takes your breath away.
About the only qualifying statement I would make in that, Daniel, and I agree with you. But, you know, one of the things, and I think, by the way, also I should make the point, because we have spoken, obviously, harshly and critically of what has been marketed as the 9/11 truth movement. I'm sure I speak for you in this regard. That is not to say that there aren't some researchers such as yourself and people like Sibel Edmonds, you know, John Loftus, people like Rita Katz, a lot of others, Matthias Brokers in Germany, people don't hear about, unfortunately. And there are some really, really good researchers doing some very fine work on September 11th. But there is an organized movement that portrays itself as a truth movement, but is in fact a well-organized and readily documentable disinformation movement. And a lot of those people are really sophomoric, though, Daniel. They don't know anything about the intelligence community or the history of, so that when they hear about the name Adnan Khashoggi, you might as well be talking about theoretical physics, because they don't have a clue, you know? They don't have a clue.
But here's the case is that if you go on the Internet mm-hmm. and type in questions about 9/11, you'll come up with 100 sites with this information before you come up with, you know, much that's really good.
Mm-hmm.
For example, after apparently one of our recent talks, the transcript, a website, I think it was GNN, Guerrilla News Network, they were discussing the transcript of our talk, and Carol Brulé, is that how she says her name?
Brulé, I think it's actually of French extraction.
Came on and said, since these two people are talking about me, I feel I should respond. And she says that Daniel Hofstetter obviously believes that anything that isn't discussing the alleged hijackers is not germane. To paraphrase, but the words that were in quotes that was his direct quote from her is alleged hijackers. Well, anyone that 5 years after 9/11 is still speaking about alleged hijackers is a moron. Is either a moron or is being paid to lead people astray. Because who was cutting? I mean, we all know that the government was covering up after 9/11, and we all know it took a long time before things began to trickle out. But everything that's trickled out since proves there were 19 Arab hijackers on those planes. And to say alleged hijackers today is like saying, well, the alleged American landing on the moon.
Yep, okay. There is. By the way, one of the focal points for that, the use of that phrase, is a mainstream press report. I think there was one account in the Guardian, perhaps another in the BBC, but there was a report which, not incidentally, came out of Saudi Arabia shortly after the attacks, which said that a number of the hijackers.
It was on the BBC.
Well, the thing that
retracted it, and you know, a few of those people, the hijackers on the planes, may have assumed other identities, well, but they were all Arabs.
Well, the thing is that some of them may have
worked for Osama bin Laden.
Not only that, but some of them were also working for various intelligence services, including some Saudi agents. One of the things, Daniel, if not in this interview, then in a future talk, one of the things that I would like to do, and by the way, we want to remember to get to the stands, you know, because this global network, part of which you have been identifying down in South Florida, is indeed a global network. And if we're going to understand these events, we have to take a look at what they are doing in a lot of places that might seem to be a long way from Venice, Florida, such as Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, or Fanning Island. But in fact, this global network, which goes through South Florida, has a lot to do with it. But, you know, just by way of sort of moving on from the discussion of the disinformation movement, one of the things that's so important to grasp is that if one avoids the, you know, if you don't watch the birdie and if you keep an eye on the hand that's under the table that's producing the rabbit out of the hat, you'll see some very, very significant people who have a lot to lose if, in fact, the truth does come out, because the underworld of people like Wally Hilliard, Victor Kozeny, Wolfgang Barringer, Mohammed Atta, Marwan al-Shahi, this underworld intersects and overlaps with an overworld that involves some very powerful people, from Jeb Bush to people associated with some of the law firms that were involved with the litigation of September 11th, and some very, very powerful people in not only the GOP, people like Karl Rove, people like Grover Norquist, but people in positions of power around the world. And that is one of the reasons why they don't want people paying attention to what you've been dealing with in South Florida, because if you start paying attention to that, then you begin moving to other places and other things. And time permitting, either in this talk, Daniel, or maybe in a future interview, I'd like to take that very important piece of the puzzle, which you have so dutifully researched in South Florida, and try to fit it in with some of the larger pieces, because indeed I think that the significance of what you've come across really becomes most it's highlighted best and assumes its largest importance when seen as part of this global network. Your investigations of the South Florida connections, Dan, you have indeed, you know, as I call it, Club Hopsicker. You know, the latest Club Hopsicker vacation goes through the Mediterranean, through the Bosporus, and we wind up in South Asia. So what is the latest tour of Club Hopsicker, Daniel? How is it that Club Hopsicker moves from Venice, Florida, to the exotic climes of Kazakhstan, Tashkent, Dushanbe, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan? That's a long haul. How does Club Hopsicker get to former Soviet Central Asia?
Well, I knew there had to be a Borat angle to all of this. Actually, what happened was since I discovered that there was that plane of Wally Hilliard's, that Learjet with 42 pounds of heroin, had made 39 weekly runs from Venezuela to Fort Lauderdale, to Orlando, to New York, mm-hmm. the milk run, okay, dropping off drugs. And the question was that Colombian heroin? Or was that heroin from Afghanistan? And I had no idea what the answer was. I knew that a man named Edgar Valles Diaz had been convicted, and he was the one that leased the plane. I knew nothing more about Edgar Valles Diaz until about a month ago, when I received information that Edgar Valles Diaz was a major narcotics trafficker. And actually, the way this sounds, he's a major narcotics trafficker working with Hugo Chavez, is the information I received. And that who he worked for, who he was picked up in New York by every time the plane, every weekly flight, was a man with the Russian mob. But I guess there's a half a dozen major Russian mob families. Now, the information I received was the man that picked him up claimed to be Jewish, but was really Muslim.
And he was from the former Soviet Union.
Right.
Okay.
And then I discovered, because now I've got to do research, who are these people? I read this book, Red Mafia, and by a fellow named Friedman, which is, I guess, the best book written about the Russian mob in Brighton Beach so far, and learned that the FBI had identified the second largest Russian mob crime family in Brighton Beach as Muslim. But everyone there in the community of Brighton Beach insisted they were Jewish. Okay? So this guy, Igor Borisovich Rabaev, is from Uzbekistan, which was part of the former Soviet Union. And he was able to get out of the Soviet Union to Israel by claiming to be Jewish. But in reality, he's Muslim. And apparently mobsters claimed to be Jewish with some regularity to escape the USSR. So I don't know a whole lot more about him other than that he's wanted currently on two separate continents and has disappeared. But so the guy that was – so Wally Hilliard's Learjet, okay, is obviously working – whoever Hilliard is working for, that organization, let's call them the Rogue CIA, for example, is working with the Russian mob to bring heroin from, and heroin would originate in Afghanistan because the trade route goes from Afghanistan to Uzbekistan and from Uzbekistan to Europe and the U.S. So this would be a rogue CIA working with the Russian mob, which contains Islamic elements in it.
Daniel, very quickly, let me just fill a couple of names in for people that might not be that familiar with the scope of your work. Wally Hilliard, along with Rudy Decker's own Huffman Aviation. That was the flight school, which appears to have basically been an intelligence front of sorts, and it was through Huffman Aviation that Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shahi and many of the other people who crop up in the 911 investigation infiltrated the United States, and they did so as part of an international criminal network which functioned and continues to function in South Florida as well as around the world with protection. And this is the jet, and this is the person for whom Mr. Rabaev and the former Soviet Central Asian connections that we're going to be talking about. That's where this fits into a discussion of September 11th.
All of this goes to answer one question. 1 week after 9/11, the FBI, in fact, the head of the FBI, Robert, Mueller, gave a press conference in which he stated that the FBI was aware that terrorists had been in the U.S. training at flight schools. But either because we have no free press and no one asked the question, or he wasn't taking questions, he never answered. The obvious question one would ask is, if you knew they were here, why didn't you pick them up? Well, the reason they knew they were here and the reason they didn't pick them up was because this was part of a protected drug trafficking network that obviously would have had to have been benefiting people in the U.S. with the power to affect the activities of federal agencies like the FBI and the CIA. You follow me?
Mm-hmm. Yes. By the way, Daniel, before we get into the discussion of the Russian connections, bear in mind that Hugo Chavez basically is one of the individuals through whom we were talking about transportation, and at least some of the transit arm of this network goes through Venezuela, which obviously, like parts of the Soviet Central Asia, former Soviet Central Asia, and obviously like other areas where we're seeing Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda-connected elements, petroleum as well as drugs is a major focal point of that area. You know, Hugo Chavez's top energy official, or one of his top energy officials, is Carlos the Jackal's brother. Just remember that one, Daniel, because we'll drag that back in through the back door sometime.
Well, you know, Venezuela was important in another investigation I'm working on currently, which is how is it possible that an American company that owned a DC-9 busted with 5.5 tons of cocaine on board in Mexico can escape the wrath of the law, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm an agnostic about a lot of things. I'm an agnostic about Hugo Chavez, all right? I don't have a position pro or against. I mean, I could definitely see where someone representing the poor would be useful in South America. On the other hand, if, as it now begins to appear to me, this guy is facilitating Islamic fundamentalist elements that killed 3,000 people, then I'm against him. And this goes back, once again, to something Carol Brulé wrote, about our recent talk in which she was mentioned. She said she's for peace. Well, I'm for peace too, but I also used to live in the Bay Area, and I remember a slogan that was popular when I lived there, and that slogan was no justice, no peace. Now, as far as I can see, the 3,000 poor dead folks that died on September 11th have not received justice. Their families have not received justice. The people responsible, both in this country and outside this country, for their deaths have not been apprehended. And actually, that's what I'm passionate about.
Daniel, you're certainly passionate about it. And, let me tell you, I run a pretty tight ship, and I'm a pretty hard-nosed SOB, and you would not be occupying the prominent position in these broadcasts if I didn't think you had something extremely worthwhile to offer, you know. And again, it What's going on in South Florida is part of a much, much larger picture. And we do want to focus on some, because it seems a long...
I don't want to interrupt, but let me interrupt. But
sure.
Why it's important to me is because of those 3,000 dead people. I mean, I have talked to sources who probably fly drugs for the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said, you know what? I don't care about the drug trafficking that much. I mean, how I care about the drug trafficking is if people with responsible positions in our country are bringing drugs in, then you have a commitment responsibility to the 2 million poor slabs in prison for dealing small amounts of the drugs you're bringing in, you know, to alleviate those sentences, okay, to decriminalize. But I would rather have, for instance, if there has to be an organization controlling the importation of narcotics, I'd rather have it be the CIA than Hugo Chavez or some Colombian drug lord, okay? But what we're talking about now, I mean, the essential focus of what I'm doing is 3,000 people died and whose feet are being held to the fire. I mean, what kind of an inquiry has there been into how these people were allowed to be here? Okay, and what they were doing while they were here. I mean, heads should still roll because of that. But because we don't have a free press, and because apparently there are people in our society who are so powerful they can get away with damn near anything, including having 3,000 people murdered in front of our eyes and escape responsibility. And that really fries me. But I imagine it fries you. It's a basically naive response, perhaps, but there it is. So
well, it is important, and Daniel, like I say, at some point later in this broadcast, or in a future program, I want to take the piece of this jigsaw puzzle which you have described for us and delineated for us down there, and fit it into something larger. Because, you know, one of the things that's quite clear, Daniel, if I could wax editorial here for a second, we're almost out of time on this side, but the work that you've done is not only very important, it's very heroic, and it's also very clear in listening to your discussions over these months that it bothers you that there aren't more people paying attention to the work that you're doing. Well, one of the things that you might not necessarily call more attention to what you're doing, but it certainly will enhance the credibility and the support that your research has, and that is to fit it into some larger context, because what the stuff that you've been investigating down there fits in really neatly with a whole bunch of other things as well. And this is by way of shoring up what you've done. A couple of weeks ago, in one of our most recent interviews, for example, we've been talking all about the Germans and Austrians in South Florida with whom Mohammed Atta was associating, and this is something that nobody, for all intents and purposes, but you talks about, and yet there was an LA Times article from October or November it was, of 2001, talking about some of those people. So we'll talk about that or some of the other overlapping connections in the next side of the broadcast. We've been visiting with Daniel Hopsicker, the author of, among other titles, Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, as well as numerous articles on the Mad Cow Morning News website at www.madcowprod.com. We're going to be continuing with this discussion in Side 2, but this wraps up Side 1 of catching up with the interview with Daniel Hopsicker, Victor Kozeny's Last Stand, and we'll get to the pun in Side 2. This has been recorded on October 29th of 2006. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.